Now, for 10 minutes on Wednesday, clean energy sources, mostly solar and wind, powered most of Australia's biggest grid. Despite being just a short blip, it's being hailed as a major milestone in energy generation across a vast network. The climate and energy advisor, Professor Ross Garnaut, believes that Australia indeed has the potential to take this even further and to become a global energy superpower in a post-carbon world economy. He details this ambitious plan with an effort to change the entire public conversation, really, in a new book, Superpower. And he joins me this morning from Perth. Ross Garnaut, welcome back to Breakfast.
Hello, Geraldine.
So we've managed to power our largest grid with more than 50% renewables for a whole 10 minutes. Is this a breakthrough?
Oh, that's just a step on the journey, Geraldine. No, not surprising. There have been times when South Australia and lots of times when Tasmania has been 100% renewables. 50% for a while, 50% most of the time. More than 50% all of the time, they're just steps on the journey.
And you believe, do you not, that Australians have not grasped that there's a real potential, massive natural advantage that we have that we're neither recognising nor exploiting?
Well, it's true that most Australians don't recognise that. I didn't recognise it myself until years of work on the potential and on the reality of our strength relative to other countries made it clear to me that we have that opportunity before us. So in this book, Superpower, I'm bringing that knowledge and experience to the Australian community. I hope that knowledge of it makes a difference.
Well, if I read it correctly, it was a fortuitous impact of those South Australian blackouts a few years ago that actually seemed to me to have really focused your mind. You had to look closely at that whole set of incidents.
I'm not sure that was true of me, Geraldine, because I've been working in South Australia with Gen Energy on grid stability and grid security, and working on very big batteries to stabilise the system before the blackout. But the blackout brought the issues of security and reliability in the grid to the forefront of national attention, and I think that helped everyone to start doing something about it.
Mm. I suppose what changed your mind? You say that you hadn't fully realised what potential we had. What was it that particularly changed your mind about it then?
Recognition that the costs of renewable energy were coming down much faster than I anticipated. In my 2008 review for all of the state and territory governments and the federal government, I'd built into very detailed modelling and expectation based on lots of consultation with people who know that solar power costs would come down by a few percent per annum. Well, by about 2014, 2015, it was clear that they were coming down much faster than that, and it wasn't going to be long before they were the lowest cost as a source of power. And once that happens, Australia has great opportunity because there's no other developed country with anything like the wealth of renewable energy resources that Australia has.
Just persuade us more about that, please, because I think listeners might say, oh, well, surely there are others who compete with us. And you're quite adamant that we really must exploit this natural advantage we have.
Oh, we must, only in the sense that we're silly if we don't. But across southern Australia, the combination of high-quality wind, especially in all the west-facing coasts and west-facing ridges and mountain ranges, and very good solar insulation is unique in the world. As you go further north, then the solar becomes the best in the world. The wind's still very good in the right locations. Australia doesn't have such strong competing use of land as in densely populated Asia, Europe, and parts of North America. And it's that combination of factors that that gives us our comparative advantage, which is very strong.
Now, you do say that for all of this to happen, and there's more here we could go into, that we do have to have a different policy framework, given the decades-long political infighting over carbon pricing and transforming the electricity sector. What has to happen to make this vision of yours a reality, the cheapest green power on earth?
We need stability in the policy environment, and in this book I'm very keen to describe a way forward that is possible for all political parties in Australia to support without contradicting contemporary policy commitments. I think that in the electricity sector, the three crucial things are to put strong focus on security and reliability of the grid. I think it's very important in that context to accept the recommendation 4 of the ACCC in its report on electricity, which would have government underwriting of firm power made available to new players. It's not going to be possible for us to get the expansion of high quality high voltage transmission that we need for a power demand that's 3 times as big as current demand to service the new industries and the electrification of transport entirely within our existing transmission policy framework. We need to recognise the contribution that that private unregulated transmission can make to the regulated system.
So you have two systems side by side. Well, not they collaborate, do they?
Yes, and the regulated system can pay for the services of importance to it from the unregulated system, but a lot of the new capacity, the new renewable energy to service the new industry, and there will be a lot of new industry in this world, will require the sorts of investments that would be expensive to make under the existing regulated system.
Yeah, because so you're really talking about a lot of government. You just said government underwriting, and I think you also talk about securing globally competitive capital to underwrite all that would be required to, as you say, to sort of support storage. So this is, well, it's sort of a completely new notion about government money coming in as a backdrop, is it, for a private-public partnership?
Well, it's not a new notion. The ACCC talked through the need for it and the justification in its important report a year or so ago, and it's been much discussed in Australia. A version of it has been taken up by the current government, but I think complete acceptance of that recommendation would make a very big difference. Now, it's not new, and of course, a variation on the theme is how we used to supply power when Australia was globally competitive, but we've got a different system and we won't be going back to the old one, so we need to provide globally competitive services in a different way.
And that global, you're saying that if we do move, as everybody is now sort of becoming more aware of, to maybe zero carbon emissions by 2050, that this will further change the landscape and offer Australia a great opportunity to prove that all its products are produced by full renewable use.
Yes, the whole world is moving towards zero net emissions. That's by the middle of the century. The developed countries will have to get there sooner. That's an integral part, in fact, the critical feature of the Paris Agreement that we and all other countries signed on to at the end of 2015. Mr. Trump has said that he will try to get the US out of it. It won't be out of it by the time he ceases to be president. And it matters a lot what happens in the year ahead in the US, but currently all the governments of the world are committed to it. So we certainly are in that world for an industry to remain competitive, say in Japan or Germany. It will have to find zero emission sources of metals. The cheapest way of providing that will be to turn iron oxide, iron ore into iron metal in places with very low cost renewable energy that can produce the hydrogen, that can produce the zero emission steel. And economic forces then will be driving industry everywhere to take advantage of Australian resources.
Just very quickly, if I can, I mean, in the review of Labor's election loss yesterday, it said Labor should recognise coal mining will be an Australian industry into the foreseeable future. Do you think that's correct?
Well, two points there, Geraldine. It depends how far ahead you're foreseeable. If you can only look ahead 10 years, then it's definitely correct. If 15 years, it's definitely correct. If you can foresee the future 30 years ahead, it's not necessarily correct. The only way coal's got a future of any kind is if we make low-cost carbon capture and storage work. There are some geological locations, for example, Bass Strait, where it may very well, but neither the coal industry nor governments have been putting the research and development effort that's necessary demonstrate whether or not that is possible.
All right. Thank you very much indeed for joining us so early in Perth, Ross Garnaut.
Good to talk to you, Geraldine.
And Ross Garnaut's new book is called Superpower, and it is La Trobe University Press. Is that right? Yes, La Trobe.